Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Sister Janet Ferns. Why are there children whose lives are spent begging on street corners, unwanted by their families and neglected by society? We hear from three Zambians who are deeply concerned for the welfare of the street kids in their country. Catholic radio is developing rapidly throughout the world, but especially in places such as Africa and South America. Dr. Daniela Frank, director of the Catholic Media Council, or CAMECO, describes her organisation's contribution to Catholic radio. Finally, we will pray with one of the saints. But first, he was the second longest-serving cardinal in the history of the Church and is buried alongside his father and brother in St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. Yet, Cardinal Henry Stuart was also entitled Duke of York and was heir to the throne of Scotland. We hear from Dr. Mary Jane Cryan, who wrote of his work in Frascati in Italy. He was a prince of the blood royal, the son of an exiled king, baptized by a pope. During his life, he was heir to the throne of four countries, a cardinal in a fifth, an uncrowned king, the last of his line, and is buried with his family in the crypt of St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. And the importance of Henry Stuart, the cardinal, is because he was the brother to Bonnie mm-hmm. Prince Charlie, and he was the son mm-hmm. himself of
the old pretender.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, in fact, he's the last of the Stuart line. When he died in 1807, the Stuart line ended, the exiled Stuarts.
Henry Benedict Maria Clement Thomas Francis Xavier Stuart was born on March the 6th, 1725, in the Palazzo Muti Papazzoro in Rome. The younger son of King James III of England and the 8th of Scotland and of his Polish wife Maria Clementina Sobieska, herself the granddaughter of a king. Both he and his brother Charles were born in Rome. And they were actually baptised in the Church of the Twelve Apostles, mm-hmm. which was just at the back of the house.
Exactly. That was what they called the Palazzo del Re. It was the beautiful Palazzo Muti that was given to the Stuart family by the Pope, because the Pope was the godfather of the mother, Princess Clementina mm-hmm. Sobieska. Mm-hmm. So that's why she was called Clementine after Pope Clement. So they received for use this huge palace in Piazza Santi Apostoli.
He was brought up in the Scottish court, which was here in Rome.
Mm-hmm. In fact, it was recent studies by Edward Corp have shown us that the court in Rome was a real English court. They actually drank ale and ate roast beef, and they used their English manners all the time, even though they were over here for several generations. They didn't lose that.
And there were plenty of English spies keeping an eye on them while they were here in Rome as well.
They certainly were. Mm-hmm.
Because of the possibility of coming back mm-hmm. to England and taking up the throne. Henry was 5 years younger than his brother, Charles Edward, known to the world as Bonnie Prince Charlie. Life was not always easy for the two boys.
Well, before he entered, he became a cardinal, and he went to Paris, to France, with his brother to help out in the organization of one of the expeditions. But when that came to nothing, then he returned to Rome, and they had completely separate lives. And they had lots of times when they weren't on speaking terms either, as far as I'm concerned. Also with the father, there was a lot of problems. There was not a very happy family life. I think at one point, even Princess Clementina left and went to in a convent. She lived in where is now Santa Cecilia. You know this conservatory of music?
Yes.
She lived in there. In fact, there's a plaque on the wall that reminds of her living there. She just left and went to live on her own.
But what was Henry like as a person?
No. Some of the people described Henry, Cardinal Henry, as a very difficult man. Of course, the father is a very difficult man. And other people said that he was, showed the good part of him, the good side of him. The man of music, the man of great learning. He was a great collector of books. In fact, most of his collection of books is now part of the Vatican Library. And he set up at the seminary in Frascati, he set up a huge library. And in fact, in the diaries is even the description on his return from his trip to Pisa of how he went in to check out the new library, the walls, and the beautiful bookcases that he had handmade for his book collection. Unfortunately, these were all damaged during World War II. They don't exist. The building was completely destroyed in World War II.
He was made a cardinal before he was actually ordained.
Mm-hmm. It was a secret history, because it was a very big public relations event for the church, you can imagine. And so they made a big thing out of it. In fact, the Palazzo, the one where the Biblicum is today, they put up a lovely fake facade, and just for that occasion. And there's a painting that shows this facade with a celebration of the cardinal's, being made a cardinal. And then a big party, and it was quite an exciting moment for a royal prince to become a cardinal.
Yes, because the piazza where the reception took place, actually you've got a ballroom overlooking it, and you've got a beautiful view of that whole piazza from... Well, what is now the library, but what was the ballroom in those days, and a lovely terrace as well. Prince Henry became a cardinal here in Rome on July the 3rd, 1747, receiving the title of the Church of Santa Maria in Portico, which is sometimes called Santa Maria in Campitelli. Henceforward, he used the title Cardinal Duke of York. On December the 18th, 1752, he was raised to the title of Cardinal Priest and given responsibility for the Church of the 12 Apostles, the very church in which he had been baptized. Cardinal Henry travelled extensively in Italy, partly because of his poor health and partly because of his responsibilities as a cardinal, but travelling was no small venture. Once he was a cardinal, he seems to have travelled around Tuscany quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first reason was for going off to do this cure of the waters in Pisa. So his first trip was 1763. And, of course, when he travelled, it wasn't like today's people. He had a whole entourage with carriages, and he sent ahead his cook and one of the men who worked for him. There were 76 people in his upper family. It was divided into two sections, the upper family and the lower family. And in his upper family, or the familia alta, there were people like the doctor, and there was even his private chaplain, I think his name was Stoner, Christopher Stoner, who was a famous character connected with the English circle there, and even had his own private violinist and doctors and all of that. And then the lower family, they're all listed in my book of, they have different jobs. It was a completely male, exclusively male world at those times. Women are never mentioned, which is something that makes us smile today. The only women that are mentioned are Marchesa so-and-so, whose son he baptized, and few ladies of the noble world. But most of the women were never mentioned.
There is a very detailed diary of Cardinal Henry's travels and activities.
And the actual diaries were written not in his hand, but by his private secretary, just as we'd have nowadays. If you're a cardinal or the pope, you have your private secretary who writes everything for you. And this personage, this Don Giovanni Lando, is very mysterious, but he continues at the service of the cardinal through all of these travels. And an interesting point that I made in my book is that we have all of these portraits and paintings and busts of Cardinal Henry, but we don't know what this Don Giovanni looked like or anything about him. So I had a friend who's a graphologist do a psychological portrait of him, and it shows how his personality through his writing changed over the years that he was at the service of the cardinal, and how he changed in his handwriting and also in his way of explaining, what they went to see and what things they did on their voyages, on their travels. Also, food was very important. Food is often mentioned. How many people came to lunch, what they had for lunch, what wines they were served, the entertainment. Every time they traveled, they came to Siena or to Orvieto. They would go be presented with a wonderful dinner by the host, and then after, there'd always be some sort of conversazione in the evening, because there was no television then. So they would sit around and have conversazione, which, it seems, was introduced by a young English noblewoman who went to live in Toscana. Before, they didn't do that, but the English ideas came in through other travelers who came in, expatriates, you might call them, who married into Italian noble families in the Tuscan area. So their food, their conversations, the music, because every time he was a very important man as far as music was concerned. He even, they say, played beautifully the violin and even composed some songs, some music of that time. And then when there was theater, whenever there was theater, he had a special box set aside. The family always had a box at the opera.
But Cardinal Henry was not only a man of the church. He was also a royal prince with a family and a country going through difficult times. But that's another story. Now we will hear about the phenomenon of Catholic radio, as radio stations appear, especially throughout the developing world, at an amazing rate. As Dr. Daniela Frank describes the work of the Catholic Media Council, I couldn't help but look back to the days when I was on the receiving end of Cameco's help, as I worked to set up a Catholic radio station for the Archdiocese of Lusaka in Zambia. Cameco really works. Having the opportunity to speak to Dr. Daniela Frank was a joy and an occasion for shared experience, during which we just happened to have a microphone in between us. Daniela is both the world president of the Christian Life Communities, but is also the director of the Catholic Media Council, or Cameco, based in Aachen in Germany.
I think my interest in working on international level really comes from my international experiences in CLC. So I'm a communicator, I studied communications, and through CLC I was in contact with the Philippines. I went the first time to the Philippines, and that was the reason why they called me to come to Cameco, because I had some background in media and development.
I first met Daniela several years ago when I was involved in setting up a Catholic radio station for the Archdiocese of Lusaka in Zambia. I myself sought the help and advice of Cameco, so know from first-hand experience the great amount of support that could be offered by the organisation. Daniela explains the reasoning behind Cameco's existence.
So at Cameco, we are Catholic Media Council. That's a consultancy office of the church funding agencies in Europe and the USA to support the funding agencies in their decision-making about communication projects in Africa, Asia, Latin America, and Central and Eastern Europe. That means from if a funding agency receives an application to support a radio station, they might consult us and say, okay, what do you think about it? So on the one hand, we work for the agencies, but I think a role which is of growing importance is really to support the people on the spot who are working in communications to develop their projects, their programs, and to see, okay, what do we need to really do a better work?
Well, I know from my own experience in Zambia, the amount of support that we received from Cameco in setting up a radio station was phenomenal. And it was so easy to ask a question and know that an effort would be made to find an answer that would help.
We really want to be partners of the people, you know, to see, okay, we can provide the experience we have. Cameco is existing now for a bit more than 35 years, so we really could accompany the work of communications developing after Second Vatican Council. So we have a quite a good overview, and we are in touch with several experiences.
Radio is flourishing in Africa and is potentially an ideal medium of communication in a culture with a deeply oral tradition. However, goodwill alone is not enough if a radio station is to be successful. Training of producers and managers is an essential part of the initial planning. Daniela is realistic in her concern that radio stations should be of as professional a standard as possible if they are to be effective in today's world.
In Africa, really, radio is now booming for the last 10, 15 years. A lot is going on, is developing. So, of course, new questions arise. What means community radio in an African context? I think in Africa, radio is an ideal instrument because it's deeply an oral tradition, oral culture. So to help people to express themselves, you don't need to read, you don't need to buy a paper, but you can listen to radio. So to see how can we organize that work, how can we develop the programs in a way that we really have an impact. It's not enough just to have a radio station. I think sometimes we are a bit in the risk to say, okay, it's important to have that medium, but nobody thinks before, what do we want to do with that medium? Mm-hmm. So really to reflect, whom do we want to reach? What is the best way to do it? Often I think radio is a good answer, but not always. And then, so, okay, how do we now organize it? How, for example, the training of people is a key issue. To do good programs, it's not enough just to sit in front of the microphone and to talk, but you need a concept. You need people who know how to handle the specific language of radio. Management is an important issue. You know, you might get some support to set up the radio station, but you need to run it, you know. So you have to see, are there ways to cover the operational costs with the resources on the spot, for example, through a listeners club or something, really to invite your listeners to contribute, even if each one is only contributing a little amount, you know, it will bring together some funds, and at the same time, it's a good way that people feel that's my radio station. They have a co-responsibility. It's not just them transmitting them programs, but it's our station. And I think for a station, that's also an important point, to get feedback, to get regular feedback of people who really identify with that.
Just having plenty of goodwill isn't enough. You've got to have a certain degree of professionalism as well.
And I think that will be more and more important. I think we have something to say as Christians, but if we do it not in a good way, people won't listen to us. It's really, in the media field, you have to compete with quite a saturated communication market, and you only will reach people when you offer it in a way they find attractive. I think sometimes I listen to some priests, bishops, but also label, well, we can spread the good news, that's why people will listen to us. I think on the long run, that's not enough. We have to do it well.
Somehow, the Catholic Media Council manages to span a huge range of cultures and traditions across the globe. The important question remains, how can we best communicate the gospel message?
And I think it's also not enough to say, okay, we just want to reach those we reach anyhow in Sunday Mass. You know, we want to reach more people. We want to use communications to foster dialogue of the church with the society, to offer what we have to offer, to invite people to listen to us. And for that, we also need a way to communicate not only those who know our Christian language, who know our rights, know everything, but to say, okay, how can we find a language which really is understandable for all people of goodwill? And I think that's a challenge we might become aware of more and more now, not only in Europe, where it's a key issue, or in the United States, or it means in the western or northern part of the world, but really also in the south, it is becoming more and more important. It's not anymore that the church has a stance, okay, we say and people will listen, but although the church has to struggle with all the opinions, ideologies, positions expressed in the communication field. And okay, what is our specific thing and how can we communicate it well?
finally to the world of the street kids in Zambia. One evening during my 12 years in Zambia, I was on my way home from work and gave a lift to one of the maintenance staff from Zambia's Catholic Secretariat. As we stopped at the red traffic lights, he jumped up in surprise. He recognised one of the street kids as his next-door neighbour. "That child has no need to beg," he said. "His parents are poor, but he has no need to beg. They have pushed him out, perhaps, or maybe he has found a way to earn money for himself."
Sometimes people are not very happy in their family, and children see that, and they see this is not the place to be. Where do we go? Streets, where we can laugh with friends and find bread.
Naboth Ngulube is a lecturer in psychology at the University of Zambia and is also involved in post-basic nurse training. Time and again, he has seen the children on the streets and wondered what led them to such unhappiness.
It's a very serious problem. For example, in 2001, PCI, Poverty Concern International, conducted a research for Lusaka. And the sample was 1,232 children in the streets. It's very serious. So the research findings indicate that you have children with one living parent, with both parents, living with parent and close relative alone, unemployed caregiver, and so on and so forth. Further information shows that 10% of those children had only a father alive, mother died. 26% mother alive, father dead. 42% both parents alive, but is on the streets. Mm. And so on and so on. Avoiding school is one of the reasons. Abuse, being abused by parents and the community. So children are running away. They see these things. And in some families, it's obvious that you can't leave a child alone.
Dr. Griselda Mukumba is a consultant gynecologist and obstetrician at Lusaka's University Teaching Hospital and is fairly clear that a main reason for the street kids is the breakdown of the traditional family.
Some of these things are actually our own making. If I am not able to look after the orphans, I'm sure I'm not the only one in the whole family. And some people have so much money, some have nothing. And we don't have that heart of sharing some of these monies or the foods that we have. We would rather throw it away. Go into the dustbins, you'll find food thrown away. Mm-hmm. And yet there are others that have nothing.
People are no longer sharing.
Because of the evil. This is part of the evil that is coming into the country that we are copying from other places. Mm-hmm. It is an evil because it is part of the greed. You are greedy. You don't want to share. You have been probably pushed like that because of the system. That is there. They call it modernization.
Mrs. Masiku from the Nurses Guild of Zambia is also adamant that sustained sharing is also a big part of the solution. Giving small handouts is not the answer to the terrible conditions in which the street kids live.
When we look at number of children, I've never seen a concept of there's never enough food. The little that is there can be shared. But what is changing? What has changed? We're the same families. If I was brought up in a family where there was sharing, why shouldn't I share? Because it has sustained, I've managed to grow to this level. Can't I make the other people also grow to my level? Therefore, I don't see the component of not sharing to be there. There's always enough. But as already said, it's because of people not having the heart of life of the other human. Because if you feel that every person needs something to eat, definitely you give. As I said, to these children, we very much want to give. But for how long? Therefore, it will be important to find what has caused these problems. Because even if I give that 100, as I said, what is it going to do? Even when I go back home, I'll say, but 100, even myself, what would have I got to sustain myself? Thus, it's important to find out what will be a continued sustenancy for these children.
Not all street children are poor, as Naboth Ngulube points out.
Let's not have an illusion that they're all from very poor, vulnerable. Some are from well-to-do families, but because of the culture, the way they have brought it up, it can't cope.
And Mrs. Simasiku explains.
From what assessment I did, in some samples I did, some of these children are children maybe who have been brought up in families where everything was so well. Then there's a sudden cut of that prestige or luxury. And this change just makes this child, feel so different that life has changed totally. You know, it would be...
Is it mistreating?
No, not mistreating. Probably, this child has had everything that it wanted at that time. Then suddenly it's cut off. So it can't cope with life. The life has just changed drastically from the nice way to something. So for it to continue, it finds that the best way to live the way it wanted, it's to just go in the street. Because now there are these other measures that have been put in by the family to continue living in a way to sustain themselves. But because they can't at that time the way they were living before, they go to the street.
Yet, in the new community on the streets, occasionally there is also joy. I'll never forget the evening when some of the boys who were normally begging at the lights were instead playing on some scaffolding. They were racing each other up and down the metal bars and having a wonderful time. For a brief moment, they were children once more, children playing on the streets. Dr. Makumba herself also saw the suffering of the street kids, and now, working with a group of sisters, at least some of Lusaka's orphans are loved and cared for at Nyumbayanga, our home. Somebody does want these children. And now, a prayer from one of the saints. The Offering and Prayer of Saint Ignatius of Loyola. Take, O Lord, and receive all my liberty, my memory, my understanding, and my whole will. Thou hast given me all that I am and all that I possess. I surrender it all to Thee, that Thou mayst dispose of it according to Thy will. Give me only Thy love and Thy grace. With these I will be rich enough and will have no more to desire. Amen. And so we come to the end of our programme for today. You can hear it all again in whole or in its parts if you go to our website at vaticanradio.org and click on English. I am Sister Janet Ferns. Until we meet again, may God bless you.